From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Namdi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a contributing writer for Washington City Paper and a new inductee into the SBJ Hall of Fame, the Society of Professional Journalists Hall of Fame, that took place this past Tuesday. Tom Sherwood, congratulations.
Thank you very much. You know, that award is mainly that you're old, that you've been in the
that
business
a long
time.
True.
The it award is true, because you're in it, too.
The award is for the contribution you made. And Tom was introduced by his former colleague at Channel 4, Mark Seagraves, who apparently thought that this was a roast, so he showed up not wearing a tie and then made a speech that turned out to be very, very funny. And to tell the truth, at the end of it, was really a good tribute to you.
Well, he was very funny, but you know, he stole my son's tie. My son was there. Seagraves showed up, didn't realize he was sitting at the head table, and said to Peyton, "Give me your tie." He didn't ask for it. He said, "Give me your tie." So Peyton, being a nice guy, did. But other than having to steal my son's tie, I thought he did a fine job.
It was a great evening
overall. But thank you very much for mentioning it.
Later in the broadcast, we'll be joined by George Leventhal. He's a council member in Montgomery County and a candidate for Montgomery County Executive. Joining us in studio now is Jim Shea. He's an attorney and a Democratic candidate for governor of Maryland. Jim Shea, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the governor's race, Tom Sherwood, primaries in Virginia were this past week. Wanted to look at a couple of things that happened. Well, let's start at the top of the ticket. That on the Republican side in this race, Corey Stewart won the primary, so he is the Republican candidate for governor. It, however, demonstrates that there is a kind of split in the Republican Party, because he doesn't have much of the support of the party establishment. And, of course, one of the major contributors to Republicans around the country is the Koch Brothers Foundation, and they're not going to be putting any money behind Corey Stewart either.
Yeah, they made that public, and the Americans for Prosperity, I think, is that organization. In addition, the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, which promotes people for the Senate, it's not participating either. Corey Stewart, who is Democrats say in Prince William County, is a pretty routine stick to the business of running the county as county executive there. But on the campaign stump, he's more Trump than Trump. And he thinks that the Republicans lost the governor's race last year, Ed Gillespie, because Gillespie was Trump light. And Corey will say, look, if Trump voters are not going to vote for you unless you're all in, and certainly Corey Stewart is all in, and a lot of the establishment part of Republican Party in Virginia, they didn't support Trump for president at the convention during the campaigns, and they're just kind of tolerating him as Barbara Comstock's doing in the 10th
Congressional. Speaking of Barbara Comstock, her Democratic opponent will be a woman, and it would appear that these primaries in Virginia also brought to the forefront more women candidates. How significant is that?
Well, in the era of Me Too, it's significant. You know, there's no statewide or congressional woman from Virginia, same as in Maryland. But, you know, there's like one, two, three, four, five, six of the 11 seats in the state have now women as their nominees. So it's significant. I think it's women that maybe are coming into their own in politics, and it's important.
Except in the city of Alexandria, where incumbent mayor
it's always an exception.
Allison Silverberg was defeated by council member Justin Wilson in that race. Alice Silverberg, a particular favorite of ours, because she explains everything so well when she comes.
Well, that was actually one of people criticized for that she was too willing to talk and engage endlessly for people to talk about issues, and was less inclined to support economic development. Justin Wilson, who did win, who was the vice chairman of the council, was much more aggressive about economic development and infrastructure improving. He said in his campaign, you know, Alexandria has to grow jobs and the economy in order to have the money to do things for affordable housing and infrastructure and transportation. Silverberg, by many voters, and this is a huge turnout, record turnout, was seen as just being too cautious at a time when maybe the government needs to go faster.
On to Maryland, where our guest is more familiar with events there, but let's start with Prince George's County, where is it any more than a rumor that there is at stake or being planned a large or massive payout being considered for the embattled CEO of the public schools, Kevin Maxwell. He has said that he will tender his resignation after the school year ends, which I think is next week around June 20th. But three school board members, those who have been essentially in opposition to both him and to the county executive, Rashawn Baker, who's running for governor, they say that they have heard that they're planning to have a big severance payout for Kevin Maxwell.
Well, there's no factual evidence that there's, in fact, a payout. It's not required under Mr. Maxwell's contract, although he does have 3 years left, and it would be unusual not to have some kind of payout. But Edward Burroughs and David Murray and Rahila Ahmad, who are the three minority members of the school board, have been complaining about lots of things, including pay raises for employees and questions about graduation rates and all of that. But it looks to me like the simple bottom line politics of this is Mr. Maxwell was waiting, and Rashawn Baker, who's running for governor and is the county executive in charge of all this, is waiting till after the primary for governor before all these decisions are decided, because why have one more Prince George's school headache before the primary vote on the 26th of June?
Well, our guests would say they're waiting until I win the primary before making a decision about this. Jim Shea, have you been observing what's been going on in Prince George's public schools involving one of your opponents in this race, Prince George's County Executive Rashawn Baker?
Yeah, I have, through the media, your show, The Washington Post, and others.
Any opinions? Yes,
I do. I have an opinion that Larry Hogan will have a field day with it.
Can I just make a correction? You know, I said that Corey Stewart is the county executive of Prince William County. He's not the county executive. He's the
chair of the board of supervisors.
And thanks, Bruce DePoy, for tweeting me the correction.
Yeah. Especially having been a Virginia reporter yourself for quite some time.
I'll never make another mistake like that again. Excuse me, Mr. Shaver, interrupting you.
Not a problem.
The Prince George's County, is. You have said it, so you said in the debate that's airing Sunday on News 4 that the school problems in Prince George's will be an Achilles heel for Mr. Baker if he runs against Mr. Hogan.
Absolutely, and education is an issue on which the Democrats do have the advantage. Hogan is vulnerable, both as to the way he's funded the schools and their performance during his tenure. And if Rashawn Baker is the nominee, he's going to be on the defensive because of all the problems in Prince George's County, and we will have squandered one of our best issues.
He says in response that, yes, there have been problems, but the school system was in terrible shape when he took over, and that it is much better because of him, even if there have been stumbles and mistakes.
Well, I think that's certainly fair, but I think he needs to address the mistakes as well. I mean, he has a superintendent that he announced he wanted to pick. He would take responsibility for him, and after a very short period of time, that same superintendent has to resign.
Let's talk about you, though. We've got the polling in the state shows that about 4 in 10, 40% of the Democrats are undecided. We're into the last week, just over a week or so, 2 weeks of this campaign. You have a substantial war chest. I've seen some of your ads have been running now. You've been in the second tier of candidates. You get a lot of respect from what people say about you, but you haven't broken through yet to become the top tier of the polling that Mr. Baker and Mr. Ben Jealous have. So what are you doing between now and the 26th to pump up your numbers?
Well, you refer
to appearing on the politics.
The first step is coming here today.
All downhill from here.
No, as you alluded to, we do have a media campaign going on statewide, broadcast and cable. It's been up for 2 weeks so far, and we intend to intensify it over the final 10, 11 days.
Do you have any polling, private polling, to give you any sense of how it's doing from the media impact?
What we know is the race continues to be dominated by the undecided voter. That's certainly true with our polling. It was true with the Sun's poll. All the polls have said that.
So who are the voters you're trying to reach?
Well, I think not because I've chosen to take positions that put me there, but I think I'm naturally in the middle, the moderate lane. I think people would profile me there because of my background. It's fine with me. I stick to the issues and try and solve them. But I do think that's a voter who's likely to come in my direction. And one of the interesting things from the Sun poll was that 25% of Maryland Democrats favor Hogan.
Right.
Which is startling. That takes your 2-to-1 advantage and takes a big chunk out of it right away. But those are people who I think might naturally be inclined to side with me in the primary. And they're certainly voters that we have to get in the general if we want to beat Hogan.
This is a crowded race, though Valerie Ervin dropped out this week to throw her support behind Rashern Baker. The Washington Post categorized you as a comparatively centrist, business-friendly candidate in a left-leaning field. Do you see that as a fair assessment of your politics? And if you do, do you think centrism is good or could be a liability in an election year when so many Democratic voters are motivated by animosity toward Trump?
Well, as I said a second ago, I don't typecast myself there. I think if you look at my position on the issues, they're very consistent with what the mainstream Democratic Party, even the Progressive Party, would prefer because they're the right answers to the problems. But I am put in that moderate lane, in that centrist lane, because of my background. And I think my approach lends itself to it as well. I try to solve problems. I come at them without an ideological bent to solve them. I come with what I call common sense. Now, is that a liability? I don't think so. I think there are a lot of people out there who want to see progress. They want to see problems solved. They're tired of the partisan bickering, which seems to get in the way of progress. So I think it's an advantage. I think it's an advantage in the primary if people can finally come to a decision as to who they're going to vote for. And I think it's a distinct advantage in the general.
The headline in Robert McCartney's piece in the Washington Post was Dark Horse Maryland Gubernatorial Candidate with Lots of Cash. There are 10 days left. How do you intend to spend that cash to make sure that you are the candidate who wins this primary?
Well, we have a full field operation in Baltimore and Montgomery County, hard at work. But I think that in today's world, the media, the paid media, both TV and radio, is what I'll concentrate
on. That's what I was thinking about.
Well, you know, you're a distinguished, your critics even say you're a distinguished lawyer. You're a bit mild-mannered for the campaign trail, which is some people will say. But the other person who's leading the polling, other than Mr. Baker, is Mr. Jealous. And in your opening statement to at the NBC4 forum, again, it's airing Sunday morning, 11:30, you said, if Ben Jealous is our nominee, Larry Hogan will portray him as a tax-and-spend Democrat. He certainly has a lot of outside-the-state money for organizations coming in. But what do you mean by that?
Well, let's take his position on single payer.
Health insurance, single payer.
I think the single payer system is the right solution for the nation. Winston Churchill describes it pretty aptly when he says, you can count on Americans to come to the right conclusion, but only after they've tried every other option. And I think that's where we are on single payer. But what Ben Jealous wants to do is to have Maryland only fund a single payer system. Now, Vermont looked at that, Bernie Sanders' home state. California looked at that, where Ben Jealous was born and raised. And both of those states decided it was prohibitively expensive, i.e. big taxes would be needed in order to fund that.
Single payer has to be all in for everyone in order for it to work, like Canada and other places.
Correct. There are, of course, complications in doing that on a state-only basis. But let's just look at the money. I think Vermont looked at it, and taxes were going to go up, I think, something in the neighborhood of 8 to 10%, or the equivalent of taxes, however they decide to fund it. So Larry Hogan will seize on that, and we'll be back to the same old rhetoric about tax and spend. And we shouldn't be talking about taxes. We should talk about investments. We don't need to increase the assessment on people in order to make investments. That's what Democrats want to do. That's what I want to do.
Governor Hogan is touting that in his commercials that he has cut fees or taxes to the tune of about $700 million. That's a pretty powerful argument.
Yeah, although I got to fact check that.
We got a tweet from Annie Tolkien who says, Jim Shea doesn't have a big Facebook, YouTube, social media campaign. How is he reaching people who don't have cable or network TV?
Good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. We do have a social media campaign that we're putting plenty of money into, digital advertising. We are on Facebook and YouTube. So we're obviously missing that listener, and I'll go back and find out why. But we've got a lot of money into social media.
You were the founding chairman of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance, which pushes for improving and expanding transportation options in Central Maryland. It advocated for the Red Line, the east-west rail system that would have served Baltimore City, but which has been scrapped by Governor Hogan. Yet the state has managed to fund highway expansion throughout the state, come to a multi-jurisdiction agreement to fund metro rail service in the D.C. suburbs. How would you balance the transportation needs of all Marylanders, whether they use public transit or drive, and whether or not they live in the Washington metropolitan area? And what do you think about the job Governor Hogan is doing there?
Well, the one concrete accomplishment of Governor Hogan in the transportation area is to widen 404 on the Eastern Shore, which makes it easier for Marylanders to leave the state and spend money in Delaware. The metro funding came at the insistence of the General Assembly. And frankly, common sense, the metro is enormously valuable to Marylanders, not just Marylanders in Montgomery and Prince George's County, but all across the state. I used it for 22 years as I traveled between Baltimore and Washington as chairman of my firm. The metro needs to be operationally sound, and it needs those dedicated source of funding. So I don't know that Larry Hogan deserves any credit for it, but at least he didn't stop it when it came to vote this time around.
He had a commercial, a new commercial this week, which specifically, I think it's a 30-second commercial, specifically touts his bipartisanship. Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Madalino, who's also a candidate for governor, and some other Democrats say what that means is when Mr. Hogan realizes he's on the wrong side of the vote, he bends over a little so he can take credit for something he was against. Is that your take also?
Well, I think so. And there's so many examples of him having, for example, opposed transportation projects in Montgomery County and Charles County, opposed them. And then as they're approved and about to be construction, he'll show up with the shovel and take the credit for the construction project that he opposed.
It's pretty good politics.
He's good at it. I'm not here to argue that.
Jeff, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Kojo. I have a question for your guest in regards to what his views on recreational marijuana are. As a social worker, over many years, I've just seen many lives just really disrupted over small possession charges, things like that. And I think as the national attitude towards that's changing and saying that the guest is a pro-business, I'm wondering what his views on this is.
Jim Shea?
Yes, I've said several times publicly, including yesterday at the taped debate, that I am in favor of legalizing, regulating, and taxing the adult use of marijuana. I think that we can handle it from a medical science point of view. Of course, it can be abused, so can many substances. But this one should be legalized for many reasons, not the least of which is what you point out, that lives are disrupted over trivial incidents, and all too often African-American lives of young African-Americans. But we also have a situation where criminal enterprises are profiting enormously from this trade. And those enterprises are spreading bad things all around the state. In addition, there are plenty of busted marijuana deals that end up in tragedy and violence with folks shooting each other over it. There's a lot of money at stake, and that's why we need to take this out of the criminal domain and put it into a regulated, state-permitted system.
I think, what is the state law? Is it 10 grams of, it's like one-third of an ounce. If you have that, you won't be prosecuted anymore. But what about pardoning those who are, in fact, have been convicted or have records for nonviolent casual use, not distribution, none of that, but just casual use? Did I hear you correct? You would pardon or clear those records?
Yeah, expunge the records.
Expunge, that's
yeah.
the word I was, you're yeah. the lawyer in this room.
Yeah, well, you often know more law than I do, but that's the word. And it's important because you do want it off these young, sometimes they're not young anymore, records for something that's clearly not criminal behavior.
Even if you've been arrested, that would be a record, right? Even if you weren't if it were dismissed or whatever.
There's
a lot of bad stuff for people for getting jobs and other types of activities.
Correct.
You have described Maryland's current economic development policy as, quoting here, a race to the bottom with a focus on cutting taxes, focus on ending regulations. How would you approach economic policy in general and job creation in particular differently?
Well, I think we spend too much time with the elusive search for the magic elixir coming from out of state and solving all our problems by bringing jobs here. To be sure, the Amazon headquarters could provide a very significant and beneficial opportunity. So I'm not against seizing opportunities when they're there. But that's not an economic development plan. That's opportunist activity. What the research shows is that only 2% of your new jobs, any state's new jobs, come from companies relocating in your state. The way to grow the economy is to invest in your own. Invest in your schools, invest in your transportation, invest in the development of small businesses and startups. That's what I've done at the university system. We created 450 new businesses, startups, while I was chair. When I was chair of the empowerment zones, we did startups. We invested in small businesses, minority-owned, women-owned, small businesses. That grows the economy. Those small businesses employ lots of people. The other thing we need to focus on are economic growth that produces jobs, real, solid, good-paying jobs. To invest in a new dot-com that will make a couple people really rich, it's fine. The frankly, the banks do a pretty good job at that. What the government needs to do is focus on providing us incentives and credits for companies that are going to employ real good jobs, real good employees.
Well, to do that and to have education pre-K statewide as opposed up to the counties, is what the state spends money, obviously, for schools and construction, but where is it falling short? Is it simply just, I think it spends, Mr. Hogan has at least spent the minimum required by law, but is it your position, I think Democrats in general, that much more should be spent and that casino money should be guaranteed to go as an addition to, but not as a substitute for other money?
Yeah, you're right on a couple different points. Hogan's funding has not included the inflationary, there's been a cap on the inflationary rate that was originally in the Thornton formula. So whether it's, quote, legal or not, I don't know, but it's not fully funding the Thornton formula, which itself needs revision for a number of reasons, and we're on the eve of it. Somebody's postponed it until after this election, so we'll have to debate it during the election. But our school system is not doing well. Marylanders pride themselves on having a first-rate K through 12 system. They don't.
Well, several surveys or national surveys has Maryland no longer in first place, but still some in the top 10, but not first as it used to be.
Yeah, but those surveys measure input. They don't measure output, that is student performance. When you actually add in student performance on the kind of tests that are used internationally in the fourth grade and the eighth grade to measure progress, we're in the middle of the pack. We're in the second and third quartile in the United States. And the United States is in second and third quartile in the world. So our children are not getting an education that will enable them to compete in the 21st century. We're in real risk of falling way behind.
Let's talk about the Kerwin Commissions, because you have said that one of the first things on your legislative agenda would be fully implementing that commission's recommendations for improving education. In the state, for those who may be unfamiliar with it, that's the state commission that was established to determine the future of education in Maryland, expected to release its findings soon. But fully implementing those recommendations would probably require additional funding. How would you raise additional money for education? Would you make cuts in the state budget, or would you raise taxes?
Well, we don't need to raise taxes. What we need to do is put education in the highest priority where it belongs. It does so much for us. It's a fabulous investment that in fairly short order cuts your expenses and increases your revenue. Any person running an organization would jump at the opportunity to make an investment like that. And if I'm governor, I'll jump at the opportunity to do that here in Maryland. There are revenue streams. First of all, our economy is doing better. It's not doing as well as the national average, but because the national economy has improved, our economy's improved. There's additional revenue there. Larry Hogan has not funded education with increases at the same proportionate level as our increases in general revenue. I would certainly do that. That doesn't make it a priority. That has it treading water with the rest. But I would at a minimum do that. There also are streams of revenue available. Tom mentioned one, the casino money, which can be a supplement as opposed to a substitute. There are other streams of revenue that are coming on. The listener asked about marijuana legalization, and I noted that it should be regulated and taxed. The state of Colorado is bringing in enormous revenue.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
So that's another stream of revenue that we can capture.
What about sports betting?
Well, sports betting also would fall into that category, and I've said that a number of times publicly. I don't think that's going to have the volume of dollars that some of these other streams do. The studies that show it so far, it's not bad, but it's not a huge amount of money.
Only a couple of minutes left, but Mary Ann emails in, does Mr. Shea support using public funding to support private schools?
No.
Liz tweets in, candidate seems to overlook the Eastern Shore and the issues that are important to the people here. What does this candidate see as something that he can do for the people of the Eastern Shore?
And may we just point out on this subject, there's a new report out that the Chesapeake Bay, after years of decline, there's encouraging news on more than just pockets of the bay, but across the bay, their grasses are coming back and it's doing much better. But the Eastern Shore is much more than the bay.
Yeah, look, the Eastern Shore is very much in my sights. The public education in the shore is in a number of instances nearly as bad as what you find in pockets of poverty elsewhere in the state. So education, for sure. My transportation plan includes the Eastern Shore. There's not enough public transit, mass transit in the Eastern Shore. If you don't have a car, you're not going to be able to get to your job unless you live next door to your employer. And economic development is something that the Eastern Shore really needs. Here, we have some focus on the green economy, solar and wind energy. Certainly, the Eastern Shore is a place for that. Agriculture is our largest industry, and I have a number of proposals for agriculture. I've represented many sectors in the state, but certainly the agricultural sector as well.
AJ tweets in, is the candidate for or against the Maglev project?
That came up the last time I was on Kojo Show. I've been involved in looking at the maglev problem for 15 or 20 years. It is a kind of technology that, if put into place, would move people very quickly at very high fares, very high dollar amounts. It's not my priority. My priority would be on the MARC system and doing what's practical and doable with it, with the Purple Line, and the Metro. I think therein lies our solution.
I think there was, I don't know the details, but there was some announcement in Chicago, I believe, Mr. Musk has gotten some contract to do some high-speed transit to the airport or something there. It just happened this week, and I was so busy with the forum, I didn't have time to get into the details. But high-speed transit is the future.
Oh, it's terrific.
But how do you get there?
Yeah, you know, Musk is not, of course, Maglev. Maglev is fairly old technology. It comes from Germany. It's at least 20 years old. And interestingly, it's never been used in Germany or anywhere in Europe. The only place where Maglev is used, I think, is in China, perhaps Japan as well.
But the issue of transporting people can't just be every one of us in our car.
It can't be. We're going to kill not only are we going to kill our environment, but we're going to drive ourselves crazy sitting in traffic.
Jim Shea is an attorney. He's a Democratic candidate for governor of Maryland. And you certainly have a fan in Margaret from Kensington who tweets, thanks for having Jim Shea on today. A great guy with a true vision. He has vision, experience, and is completely unbeholden to special interests. I think I better let you go.
You know,
on that
critics say, though, he's just too polite to be governor.
Well, he certainly was polite here today, and we, if no one else, appreciate it. Jim Shea.
Well, thank you very much, both.
Thank
of you
very much for
thank
joining
you.
Us. Care. Coming up, George Leventhal. He is a candidate for Montgomery County Executive. He's a council member in Montgomery County. Tom Sherwood. Elections in D.C. Well, of course, in Maryland, they're 10 days away, but in D.C., they're just, 4 days away?
You know, we are in an extraordinary period for the District of Columbia. Anyone who's been around here for the last 20, like to the mid-90s, you know, where we had Tony Williams, who won, came out of nowhere to become a mayor, and when the city was near bankrupt, and how the rebirth of the city. And then Adrian Fenty came in for a term, and Vince Gray defeated him for a second term. And then Vince Gray got into some campaign finance troubles, and Muriel Bowser beat him in 2014. And now we are in 2018. She's running. She's virtually unopposed. There are two no-name candidates.
Yeah, somebody's going to really have to come out of nowhere to beat her in this race.
And so she's campaigning like she's 10 points behind, which is always a smart thing for candidates to do.
She's raised over $2 million.
In the council races, the incumbents, generally speaking, are look to be leading their races. Ed Lazier, a longtime Fiscal Policy Institute progressive left-wing group helping people, is running for council chair against Phil Mendelson. Mendelson has his own progressive record, and so that's a matter maybe of style than substance. So Tuesday's election is coming up. The big issue is not so much the candidates, but Initiative 77.
According to Peter Jameson in the Washington Post, the big issue in the D.C. shadow senator race is exactly which Michael Brown is this who is running. This has come up before because we had a former at-large council member named Michael A. Brown. The individual who has been occupying the shadow senator's seat for the past 12 years is Michael D. Brown. He is running against an opponent who has better financing, who has raised, about 20 times more than he has, Andrea Thomas. So the article was a focus on whether or not people would mistakenly think this was Michael A. Brown who was running. But I want you to focus on something else. These positions, shadow senator and shadow senators and shadow House representatives, were created, I think, in the early 1990s, when it was the hope that D.C. would have voting.
Jesse Jackson was a statehood senator.
That seems to be, at this point, very distant on the horizon. Why are we still voting for these positions?
Well, you know, on June the 27th, I'm doing something with D.C. Vote, a forum on racism and statehood and just where the heck the whole effort is. But this race, you know, Ms. Thomas and Mr. Brown, and this conflict between Michael Brown, the council member who was caught, you know, taking bribes and went to prison, he's back in town and he's a lobbyist now, but he's really not involved in city politics, although some people think he wants to be. And so Michael Brown is more of a low-key person who's held this office, and he gets votes for him, and some people won't vote for him because of that name. It just happens to be an odd coincidence. But the issue for the statehood people, as a citizen of the city, I'm for statehood for us to have full voting rights in Congress. But it is the most haphazard, episodic, lackluster campaign that I've ever seen.
Well,
other than that, it's good.
Enough said on that issue. George Leventhal, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here, and I want to wish you both Eid Mubarak. Today is Eid al-Fitr, a holy day on the Muslim calendar, and I started my day addressing several thousand worshipers at the Germantown Soccerplex as indicative of Montgomery County's strong desire to welcome people from all faiths and all religions and to be all backgrounds, to be a safe and welcoming place for all our residents.
As a Seventh-day agnostic, I respect all religion.
You, like our previous guest, Jim Shea, are in a very crowded race, in your case, for Montgomery County Executive. Ike Leggett, the current executive, is stepping down after 12 years in office. He has not endorsed any candidates to replace him. You're the one who would like to be the candidate to replace him. So what do you think of his tenure? What do you see as his biggest successes? Where do you think his leadership fell short? What are you going to do differently?
Well, I love and admire Ike Leggett. And consistent with what I said earlier, Ike has set a tone of kindness and a tone of inclusion that I certainly want to follow. We are in an interesting race now where some of those candidates who are not currently on the county council are saying that the county's gone horribly astray, that everything's wrong, that nothing's right, and they want to continue Ike Leggett's legacy. So that's a neat trick. my style is different from Ike's style, but I've learned a great deal from him, and I enjoy working with him. And he set a great tone, and the county really is in good shape. Of course, we need to attract more jobs. Every community wants to do that, and we want to do that. I think that some of the rhetoric about the business climate is itself harmful to the business climate. You'll never find Ike Leggett doing anything other than praising our high quality of life, our excellent workforce, our excellent school system. And I think it would be unfortunate if someone was elected basically by tearing down the very economy and county that they seek to lead. Because once you're elected, you have to own it. And things aren't going to turn around immediately.
Who is that candidate that's tearing down the county that you're running against?
Well, I'd say the three candidates who are not on the county council are seeking understandably, as a tactic to describe county government as having gone horribly.
Are you talking about Rose Krasnow, David Blair, and Bill Frick?
Those are the three who are not on the county.
Okay, I like to just name names on this.
Sure.
Now, you're more of a high wattage person, more so than Mr. Shea, who was just here. And you had this terrific, whether you're for you or against you, you have a terrific commercial, which has given you a lot of publicity after all your years in public service. What was the George Leventhal Avenger MoCo? Have you seen it? It's a very funny commercial.
I'm so glad you liked it.
It's kind of a nice... In this era of people so grousing so much about things, Trump and other things, it's kind of a nice thing to see a funny commercial.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really glad that you liked it, Tom.
Is it appearing just on cable TV?
I hope everyone who listens will go to www.georgeleventhal.com and watch the ad. If you like to laugh, if you don't like to laugh, then you probably shouldn't watch it.
You've been one of the most progressive council members, and that can be used as a positive or a negative, depending on what people say. But how does that play against the Mr. Berliner and Mr. Ehrlich, who have substantial records on the council and are also running for county executive?
Thanks, Tom. I offer progress and experience that money can't buy. I'm a progressive for progress, and I've not been someone who has fought every development project or every transportation project simply because some neighborhood objects to it. There's always going to be objections. You can't get anything done with 100% of people agreeing with it. And so I've worked with communities, I've listened to communities, but ultimately we've made progress in Montgomery County. I've been a strong advocate for the Purple Line, which encountered stiff opposition and still does to this day, but it's going to be transformative for our region. It's going to improve our quality of life, improve connectivity, especially for the University of Maryland. It's going to link the University of Maryland with Montgomery County's high-tech economy in an absolutely, as I said, transformative way. And so if I had catered to the opposition every time, then we wouldn't make progress. The root of the word progressive is progress.
So, Mr. Berlin, may I just follow up that? Just Mr. Berlin, you know, I'm just looking at the notes here, has supported development but scaled down versions in Bethesda, West Bard, Chevy Chase Lake, and all that. Are you saying that's giving in too much to those immediate communities? Because, as you say, everyone wants growth and new tax revenue and all of that. But
I have had disagreements with my colleague on affordable housing in both of those areas, Bethesda and Chevy Chase Lake. We lost some affordable housing that we might have gotten because of my colleague's effort to scale back the amount of housing in both of those areas.
We got to ask you about Mr. Blair, who got the Washington Post endorsement, who's well-funded outside candidate who has blanketed the county and the state virtually with his ads. Is there any specific objection to him other than the general criticism from his opponents that he's trying to buy his way into office?
You know, this was supposed to be the year of campaign finance reform where we really succeeded in limiting the amount of money in Montgomery County politics. And sadly, we've seen more money spent in this county executive race almost entirely by one candidate than we've ever seen before in history. And that's not the way it was supposed to be. And I don't think that's what the public wants. I don't think they want vast amounts of expenditure on campaign propaganda. I think they want candidates to put their best foot forward and explain their vision for the future and not just flood the airwaves with, you know, massive, massive amounts of spending. And I think Montgomery County voters are very smart, and I think they know that when there's a point of diminishing returns. I think after you've seen somebody's name blasted on your television screen over and over and over again, there's a point where it just doesn't matter that much anymore.
Tom, you can
spend so much that you're not buying anything.
Tom mentioned the funny ad that you have produced. You pledged to use Montgomery County's new public financing program to fund your election. That ad looked pretty expensive to produce. It portrayed you, as Tom mentioned, as a superhero. But how is the public financing working out for you generally?
It's working well. That ad cost $15,000. And I've drawn down, I don't have the exact number, about $450,000 in matching funds. So we're very competitive. We're communicating with voters in every part of the state. But the other gentleman he's already spent more than $2 million of his own fortune, and there's still 10 days to go.
So you've been in Tacoma Park 40 years or something like that?
Well, I moved into Tacoma Park in 1985, so 32 years.
And is your wife still in the child care business?
Yes, she is.
I'll tell you, I planned for this. I went back and read the hearing you had on expanding the child care from 8 to 12 kids.
That's right.
I read every page. It was like 37 pages. I couldn't believe it.
I learned a lot about what it takes to be an applicant.
But you've got a crowded race.
What small businesses experience.
Right. So you've got a crowded race, so you've got to get your voters out. Is it beyond? Where does your support extend beyond your Tacoma Park base? Because you have other candidates from that area also.
You know, I like living in Tacoma Park. But I don't necessarily consider Tacoma Park my base. I've got a great deal of support in every part of the county. I've represented the entire county. I've been elected 4 times. And we're working very hard in the African-American churches. I'm working very hard in the Muslim community. I'm very popular in
what about North County?
Well,
a lot of people in North County, Montgomery County, feel like they're out in the country and out of the city and out of mind.
Yeah, we were in Clarksburg last night, and you're right. The neighbors up there do feel that way. I had a number of house parties in Gaithersburg and Germantown, and I think I've got a lot of support up there. So, you know, really, I had 57 house parties around the county in every single part of the county.
How many votes is it going to take to win? Do you have an idea?
18 to 20,000.
18 to 20,000 votes.
We got an email from Clay who says, in my neighborhood, we're feeling the headache of more traffic and frustrated motorists. It seems the traffic infrastructure, traffic calming, and safety considerations have taken a distant backseat to development. While the county is salivating over getting Amazon to nest in Rockville and bringing yet more cars and congestion, what is your stand on major development and making sure the infrastructure is there to deal with it? And while we have Bob on the line, he has a similar concern. So, Bob, who is in your home of Tacoma Park, Maryland, Bob, go ahead, please.
Thanks very much. Yes, I have big questions about Amazon. I live in Tacoma Park, and I wonder what bringing such a huge business, they talk about 50,000 jobs, and as I understand it, Montgomery County is the prime candidate in the Washington metro area to receive this thing, and the state legislature is putting on the table $8.5 million in tax breaks and subsidies, which seems pretty outrageous to me.
Your question, Bob?
My question is, what does Mr. Leventhal feel about bringing Amazon to Montgomery County, and where are you going to put it?
Bob may have more information than I do. I don't know that Montgomery County is the top choice in the Washington region. I hope we are. If Amazon comes here, it'll generate an enormous amount of economic activity, job opportunities for the next generation of workers. Our own children need to have a place to work, and we want them to stay nearby if that's what they choose to do.
And although it's not publicly announced, White Flint area is where we're talking. That's where everyone has been talking about. It's not publicly said, but everyone seems to think that's where
it is. It's been widely reported. It's been widely reported.
It's not fake news either.
Yeah, and I wouldn't call it fake
news. But go ahead. So it's a net plus is for the county and for the state and for the region.
There's just no question about it.
How about the transportation infrastructure, which is what our caller Bob and other people seem to be concerned about?
Right. So Governor Hogan has committed to $2 billion in transportation infrastructure investments in lower Montgomery County, which would benefit the entire population of the county. We're talking about a connector between the Grosvenor Metro and Montgomery Mall, which has been in planning, the North Bethesda Transit Way. We're talking about more metro access. We're talking about new entrances. We're talking about bus rapid transit. We're talking about improvements to intersections and pedestrian and bicycle safety improvements. So all the kinds of things that have been on our wish lists for a very long time, the state is now committing to funding if Amazon comes. And certainly the next county executive, and I will do this, will need to monitor very carefully the stresses and strains on housing prices, on school crowding, on traffic
congestion.
Glad
you mentioned housing, because the dwindling stock of affordable housing is a problem not just in Montgomery County, but across the region. You're interested in doubling the money in the Housing Initiative Fund and using strategies like creative zoning and making better use of public land. But is that going to be enough? How can you, as county executive, make sure that poor, working-class people still have places to live in Montgomery County, not just for now, but for future generations?
The biggest obstacle to constructing affordable housing is the cost of land. We have one great example of something I'd like to pursue much more aggressively in Montgomery County, and that's Mount Jezreel Baptist Church retained ownership of its land, but it built 75 units of below-market cost affordable senior housing at its church property on University Boulevard. I have wide-ranging relationships with our faith communities, and there's a lot of acreage that could be utilized for large multifamily housing, little tiny, you know, collections of maybe just five or six homes. There's lots of opportunities to maintain ownership of the land with the religious institution and then bring on more units at a below market cost. So that's one new idea that I put on the table. Other candidates are now adopting it as their own, and I think that's great when a good idea gains traction.
There's several good examples of that in the district. But let's talk about homelessness also. Because of the urbanization of Montgomery County, at least the inner part of the county, you got a PhD in public policy and homelessness. Is that right?
Last year.
That was my dissertation topic. That's correct.
Where was that? University?
At the University of Maryland School of Public Policy.
Are the suburban jurisdictions doing enough, whether it's Virginia or Maryland, doing enough to address the homeless issue?
We're never doing enough as long as anyone is sleeping in the woods, sleeping in their car, or sleeping in temporary shelter. So there's always more that we need to do. But we've made great progress in Montgomery County. In 2015, we identified housing for every homeless veteran who was known to us. And this year, we're very close. We've only got about a dozen more to go, chronically homeless individuals. We've housed 350 chronically homeless individuals in Montgomery County in just the last year. So we're making great progress by addressing the subpopulations which are recommended through the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, which, by the way, we need to retain. The Republican Senate is proposing to eliminate that federal agency, which is crucially important to coordinating efforts around the United States to reduce the prevalence of homelessness.
You're one of the few public officials in Montgomery County elected that speaks Spanish. Immigration is a significant issue, and the county has agreed to spend some money to help immigrants facing deportation or other legal issues. Is that going to be, I think it's $300,000-something. Is that something, is that a toe in the water, or should more be done? Where are we on that?
Gracias para la pregunta. Thank you for the question. We are responding to a demand from the community to assist people who are at heightened risk under the Trump administration. We're talking about people with no criminal record, people who pose no threat to the community, but families are being separated. We're reading stories every day about mothers who are being sent back, children being separated. We are a humane and caring community, and we've been providing legal aid to a wide range of low-income people for a long time, so this is not that different than the kinds of grants we've provided to nonprofits before. It's just that the specific threat of deportation is so much more acute under the very punitive effort by the Trump administration to terrorize and victimize our immigrant communities.
You are a big supporter of the PERP line. Ground has finally been broken, though Maryland Transportation Secretary Pete Ron earlier this year said riders should expect delays due to a lawsuit that pushed back construction by half a year. Are you satisfied with the pace of the project so far?
Well, I wish I could ride it now. I mean, we're we're never satisfied. But look, I really do think Pete Ron has been a good actor on this project. And, you know, issues arise. I think that they've assembled a really good team with the private concessionaire, Purple Line Transit Partners. And I think they're doing a good job now. There were some glitches in the beginning, but I think they're communicating well with the community and responding to my constituents' questions. So generally, yeah, I mean, it's proceeding. It's disruptive. Construction is disruptive. And I'm very sympathetic to people who are going to suffer as a result of noise and, you know, the digging and the things that are going to
occur. The land clearing is ongoing. It's Chevy Chase Lake area over there, and all across it, it's actually being constructed. At least the prep for the land is being where we are right now, really.
Yes, but construction's underway, and it's supposed to be up and running in 2022.
Some businesses along the route have complained that the construction will negatively affect their operations. The MTA is trying to help with an assistance package for affected businesses, but I saw what the Metro Construction did in my old neighborhood. Help did not prevent those businesses from going out of business. Is what the MTA planning to do going to be enough? And more generally, how do you balance large-scale infrastructure projects like this with the needs of a local business community?
It is very challenging. In Wheaton, we're providing direct aid to businesses that are disrupted by a big county construction project. We're building a new office headquarters in the middle of Wheaton. In the case of the Purple Line, I think that should be the state's responsibility. I went to Annapolis to testify in support of help for small businesses who are negatively affected. Senator Will Smith has been a champion in that area, and I want to continue to work with him. We were not successful in the 2018 session of the Maryland General Assembly, but it's definitely an issue that will come back in the 2019 session, and I hope to be county executive at that time, and I will certainly continue to be a champion for those businesses.
We only have about a minute left.
The county has done something to try to ban plastic bags, but no jurisdiction in this region has attacked the real plastic pollution, which is plastic bottles. Mm. Is there any hope, expectation on your radar that some kind of bottle ban or deposit law would be required for plastic bottles?
I'm open to a conversation about it. The business community is really lashing out right now at some of the some of the legislation that we've passed that interfere with, you know, their retail establishments. So I think we'd have to have a broad dialogue with all stakeholders. I'm not advocating any additional bans on anything at this moment.
George Leventhal, he is a council member in Montgomery County and a candidate for Montgomery County Executive. George Leventhal, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
That's a wrap for the show this week. Thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nande.
The Kojo Nande Show is produced by Angelisa Schroepstorf, Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Avery Kleiman, Diana Mostak, Julie Deppenbrock, and Gabriella Martinez. Our engineer is Meg Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Nnamdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.